Okay, hi everyone. So just to sum up where we are, right? We're in chapter six. We're halfway through chapter six. It's one of the longest chapters and a very, very pivotal chapter in which, through his footnotes, the Nefesh HaChaim goes into quite a lot of side issues that are not needed for the main argument, but begin to show you the picture, which he's always trying to generate. How do we see the full picture? A lot of points he drops in on the sides here become very, very crucial later on. Like says, it looks like a side note, but actually it's giving us a glimpse of where we're going. Okay, so the sixth chapter is really an elaboration on a statement he made at the end of the fifth chapter from the Arizal, that the root of Adam, of the collectiveness of humanity and the root of Yisrael, is at the highest point in all the worlds, okay? And it, like a soul to the worlds. And here he clarifies in this chapter, it's not literally like a soul to a body. You know, you think about consciousness and a mind, and it wants the body to move, the body's already moved. But rather, the whole worlds were all created layer after layer, projection after projection, all the way down. And then an element of every single one ends up inside the human, okay? Ends up inside Adam. And then this long footnote that we've been, says, Zekon Adam, he says, this is the whole of Adam, this is the whole of man, is that every single detail of our persona, psychology, neural networks, biology, map and connect to a different part of the inner spiritual structures and physical structures of reality. We are a microcosm of the entirety of creation. And then he added the point, hi Marco, then he added the point that this is all pre-fate, it was only all the olamas, all the worlds and layers that are channels for divine consciousness, channels for the flow of energy, of kedusha, of holiness into the world. But during the fate of Adam Rishon, during the sin, we also became wired into all the possibilities of sin. And suddenly the shadow alternate reality became embodied in us and embedded within us as well. And where we're up to is we're in the middle of this long footnote up to a paragraph beginning Lochein. Therefore, and what he said, so as a consequence, that is that everything since the fate of Adam Rishon, since the sin of man, which was to eat from the eighth Hadas Tova Ra, which we normally translate as a tree of knowledge of good and bad, but Reb Chaim Mevolozhin points out the word da'as, knowledge, is derivative when you use the word knowledge. Its primary meaning is fusion or connection or integration. So, and it's used as knowledge because knowledge connects the mind to facts in the world. It fuses them together. It integrates them. And that's why physical relations between man and woman can be called da'as in the Torah. Not because it means knowledge, but because it means fusion and integration. And so the Eitz HaDa'as Tova Ra is the tree of fusion of good and bad, or confusion of good and bad, integration of good and bad. And that means that getting to the point of 100% pure good or 100% pure bad is close to impossible. Normal human action might be 70% good and 30% negative, or 70% negative, 30% positive. And people who go very, very far might get to 95% good or 98% good, but it's almost never going to be 100% good. And most people, when they do bad, are almost never going to be 100% bad. They'll have a justification. It'll be exaggerated, but there'll be something to do with justice, hurt, empathy, something somewhere, you know, that makes them behave the way they do. So you get the thief turns up in the house and steals, but says, look, my family doesn't have anything. This guy's got insurance, you know? Like, of course, that's not a justification, but there's a little bit of good in there. And in fact, since most people have a fusion of good and bad in almost everything they do, when we love people, we see the good in everything they do. When we dislike somebody, sure. Yeah? So we all start with nature, nurture, parental habits that we pick up and so on. And we'll pick up the good and the bad of everything around us. And our brain is wired good and bad, and our yates are tov and yates are hara, and our drives are good, our drives are bad. So that sets up a mix up to begin with. Our natural spiritual programming, it's all mixed up. So the natural behavior will be habits, neural networks, all the things we've got naturally and nurture. But the key factor that can change it through life is free will. We can shift, right? We are multiple layers of self. There's many voices that speak inside us. We have parts of all the real, all the worlds of God's holiness and all the worlds of illusion, all mixed into us as well. And we are constantly choosing, as we'll see later on. Later on, he's going to get to this, how we identify as a self is really our main free will. Okay. Yeah. We'll get there. All this and more coming to Nefesh HaChayim Shir near you. We will get there. But you're right to go, it's not off topic. All these things are on topic. The question is, what's the right time to address each one? Okay? If you really can't wait, we will. We'll talk about it. It's sort of thing that comes up in the chapters around about chapter Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Yud Tesvav. We're halfway towards this. Chapter 6 is a very big one. Once we cross it, Shemush Kutra. Yeah, exactly. Right. But the free will is a key determinant of this. And that's why in Mesilas Yesharim, for example, he talks about purifying actions that we're already doing well. So I'm already learning Torah well, giving charity well, but I can do it more pure, more without ego, more without, we can constantly be refining and refining even the habits that we got that are good, right? But this is why when we don't like people, we see everything they do as bad, because our brain kind of filters. So we've got a red screen, green screen, and we just filter on looking for all the bad, and we'll see it. It's an amazing thing. If someone gets on your nerves or somebody you have a reason to dislike, it's possible to see everything they do as evil, right? And conversely, when you love someone, it's possible to see everything they do as wonderful, right? Because there's good and bad in everything. Now, we got up to this. That's all since the sin of Adam, since the chait of Adam. And then he has this paragraph, L'chein k'shematnisim ha'adam l'mishpat. Therefore, when a person comes finally to judgment, after this world, they stand in front of Hashem, when about to be resurrected, so when we have this judgment, there have to be endless, infinite kind of calculations, because no matter how refined you are in the calculations, now there's a good, but there could be bad within the good, but there could be good within the bad within the good. There could be, right? It's so endless. I'll call prote protim in the details of the details, shall call ma'asov v'dibur v'machshavosov of every single thought, speech, and deed we ever did. The whole protein of Goisov and all the details of our behavior. What was they? Where were they tilting? And within the good was the bad. Within the bad was there some good, right? This is amongst the many reasons why we just can't judge people. Because it's way too complex to judge. You can judge a court case. There's a halacha, someone stole money, right? But even if you ever get to a court case, you'd always see there's always two sides, however crazily unjustified one is. And if there aren't, it's often because the person themselves who did the bad is struggling with natural tendencies or whatever it may be. There's always more story than one. Now, in a human court, you still have to reach a definitive point of ruling. You have to return the money, right? But once Hashem can look at everything, everything is so complex, right? That it's beyond the human ability to judge anybody in any situation. What's their nature? What's their nurture? Would we have done better? What about the good in the bad in the good, right? It's just, we're just better off not judging. that's the basic idea. But Hashem is going to literally pull out details of details of details that we can look at and go, oh my goodness, I thought I did that bad. But I see within the bad, there was some good. And this I thought I did good, but within the good, there was some bad. It has to all be deconstructed, because all the evil has to be eradicated and all the good has to be brought to the world to come, provided there's enough good on aggregate to make it through, okay? So that, it all has to be separated out, and the person's going to look and go, gosh, I never realized that good in that and bad in that and bad in that and good in that, right? That Hashem's going to do. And this is this is what it says in Shir Shirim Rabbah. The Medrash quoting Koheles Zayin Chotes, right? Koheles 7:29. Asher Asa Elokim Asa Adam Yashar, right? God made the human being straightforward. Behema, and they, v'chetam in their sins and their mistakes, Bikshu Chashbonus Rabbi, made the world incredibly complicated. They sought out complication. What does that mean? That means we ingested the tree of good and bad, and now everything is complicated. Nothing is black and white. Everything's shades of, everything is levels of gray and this and that and the other. For I in Zoyar, you see the Zoyar, before Shal Pidu Arenu, you can see what it's saying. Okay, so now this is since the fate. V'nim shacha inyan, that stayed exactly the same all the way until, when did we have one moment when it looked like we could eradicate all the negative damage from the chait, from the sin of Adam? Says the Prime Velozhen, ad eis matan Torah, until the time that Hashem came to reveal himself in the world and give the Torah. And this already, Gemaras in Shabbos and other sources in Chazal, she'oz, the impact of the snake, the poison and the slime of the serpent was gone. Okay? Now remember, as we've already said, even though the Garden of Eden is a trans-physical, it's all a physical reality from a deeper level or from a different perspective. It's not something you can just go back in a time machine and find. But it touches everything everywhere. And as we got to Har Sinai, we'd come through Egypt, we'd come out the other side, we were ready now to receive the pure tree of life. We were now, as it were, out of the tree of knowledge of good and bad, and we were ready to receive that which is above the fusion of good and bad, the pure Torah itself. That's where we stood. And as we were there, Kamosha Amar Hazal, like Hazal say in the Gemara in Shabbos, which we quoted earlier, Lochein Achar Kapuketa Egel, except then we were for a moment above that level, a level where there would have been, literally the world would have returned to the state of consciousness of the Garden of Eden. Just like in Gan Eden, Adam was one, humanity was one soul, so Yisrael, so the Jewish people, stood at Mount Sinai, at Har Sinai, ke'ish echad belev echad, right, as one human. In fact, amazingly enough, you'll see that when the Jewish people stand at the Sinai, it doesn't use the plural verb vayachanu, they camped, Vayifan, he camped, one person. That's where Rashi says, Ke'ishakot Belevachot, like one integrated organism with one beating heart. And in fact, in the Aseret HaDibros, in the Ten Commandments, Hashem doesn't speak to the people in the plural. Not only Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your God, your plural God, but Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem, your God, singular. In Hebrew, the second person, like in a lot of languages, singular and plural is different, right? So I'm Hashem, you singular, your God. The people are like one person. And all the way through the Aseret HaDibros, you will see that. La yelecha Elohim aferim, right? You, singular, don't have other gods, right? It's all the way through the Ten Commandments. It's quite unique to them. Because on that level, we were standing like Adam Arishan, like this was it. In fact, the Ten Commandments could have been read not as instructions, but as actual states of being. You're not going to kill anymore. You're not going to commit adultery. This is right. If we were on the right level, this wouldn't be like an imperative where we have to fight to do it. It would have actually been the programming. That's what the commandments were meant to be, the programming of the voice of the Garden of Eden. You won't kill. You won't be jealous. You won't this. You won't that. That's how you are. You will honor your parents. You will. This is just who, this is the inner being of who we are, right? And the idea was we were then meant to come into Israel and then the whole of humanity would join. And that was going to be the end of history. So we were on the way out of the sin of Adam. And that's what he now says. But then the sin of the golden calf, this week's Torah reading. By the way, it's a beautiful thing that they say that when you, if you're ever learning one piece of Torah and it coalesces with another you're learning, like if you're just learning a Gemara or a Nefesh HaChaim and it talks about exactly that week's Sedra, for example, good simon. It's something in Hashemayim that the spiritual forces are now coalescing. So if you, this is good. We're learning this week's golden calf. Okay? That's what happens. And then Amruch Razal, the Gemara that says, Shabbat Satan ve'irbev, is talking about how the Satan came and caused confusion in the world and started them to all doubt, where's Moshe, what's gone on, right? That. But notice the Satan, if you listen carefully to how the Gemara brings out the Pesukim actually, that, that it says, Vayar ha'am ki boishes Moshe, right? The people saw that Moshe's delayed. Al tikre boishes, so the Gemara goes to think, it says like this, Moshe told them 40 days. L'sofar b'ayim, at the end of the 40 days, bar satan, the satan, the negative forces come, ve'irbev ha'olam, and confuse the world. But notice, they had to come from the outside. That's a beautiful listening carefully to the Gemara. You got to always listen with razor-sharp ears. The satan came from the outside, not from the inside. And he says, Moshe Rabchem Echonaya, where's Moshe your Rebbe, your master? They said he's gone up to heaven to receive the Torah. Oh, no. Ba'ushe, Shaidasi says. In other words, 6 hours have come and he hasn't come. It's a play on the Hebrew words, etc. At first they don't listen and eventually the Satan persuade them. But you see it's coming from the outside like the snake in the Garden of Eden. For us nowadays, the negative voices speak on the inside. But at that moment, they had to come from the outside, right? This is the point, because it was now external. We didn't want to do bad. The only choice was to go back into the world now of whatever the choice is going to be over there, and to integrate bad back into us. And that's it, Shamba Erebeth. So you see that for a moment we were Basatam Erebeth, Hainu Shabami Bachutz, it came externally, Kamoi Be'inyan HaFeit Adam Rishon, just like the snake does before the sin of man. Kimetoichom Niskarish, because he was expelled from being actually inside us. Now the voice had to be a persuasive seduction from the outside, but it wasn't resonating with an automatic instinct inside. But once we did the golden calf, and that's why the golden calf, you look in the Mefarshim, the intentions were primarily positive, right? It wasn't going to actually be God himself. It was going to be a replacement for Moshe. It was going to be the divine intermediary. These are your angels, Israel. Not necessarily this is an alternative to God, but it was ultimately, it was on whatever level it was the desire to block Hashem, push him too far so we could connect him from our own perspective. Exactly the same as the sin of Adam. And it was exactly what Hashem had said not to do. So we're not going to go now into the whole depth of that, but very, very roughly, if you want to see this in the vision of Yechezkel, when Yechezkel has a vision of the inner workings of heaven, he has it twice. In one, he has four faces on the chariot, which four primal spiritual forces or energies that manifest God's presence in the world. One is the face of an ox. In a later version, it's the face of the Kiruv. Now, the Kiruv is an image that's allowed and engraved on top of the ark. In other words, it's the portal, it's the ultimate image of the human in relation with human and resembling a relationship with God. And it's manifest and replaced through the ox. Now, what does that mean? The ox stands in this world as the ability of the natural world to deliver the service of the human. Until the advent of machinery, the ox was your best source of livelihood. It was power. It was tameable. It was controllable. It could plow your field. It could provide in the cow meat and milk, right? It was everything. You had an ox and you had fertility. So it was like the human control over the world. The golden calf is just the child version of the potential of all human productivity, but it parallels a very, very deep spiritual force. And they're saying, we want to relate to God, but God needs a bit of a manifestation. We can't directly connect Hashem without Moshe. And God said, first of all, who says Moshe's gone, but why are you doing things your way? In a relationship, of course, you got to bring your creative energies in, but the most intimate point of the relationship must other person at the center and what are their needs, not what are your needs at that point, right? And subtle though those mistakes can be, at a cosmic level, these are catastrophes because they're already portals to self-centeredness. And that's man comes crashing back into a world of putting himself at the center. Even if the ambition is to serve God, if we are the center point, the world falls apart. And that's what happens. And then therefore the sin, yeah. It's showing a relationship between God and man in a sense, because God gives tools within the world that allow man to have control. Totally. That's what you see. You're allowed to build Kiruvim. It's not like you have no imagery. You only have no imagery that God didn't say to have. Kiruvim, these figures that are on top of the golden calf, first appear in the Torah after the sin of man. After the fate of Adam HaRishon, the sin in the garden, God says he expelled them and he put the Kruvim to guard the way of the tree of life. What are the Kruvim? He's going to talk about them in the Nefesh HaChaim, what these Kruvim are, right? What exactly? They're the image of the man. They're two, they're figurines that look like humanoid, but they're ultimately the yes, human-to-human relationship, but in the bigger picture, the man-God relationship. Now, God is not a human, right? But the point is that they're symbolizing the depth of passion and relationship. So, and in the inner spiritual place where Yechezkel sees them, in his next vision, one vision he sees the Kruv, in earlier vision he sees the ox, right? So they are things in the physical universe, understood correctly, are parts of our relationship with God. So they're saying, what's wrong? We'll construct a mirror of the deep inner workings of heaven, of the will of God himself, right? And we'll connect to it.
Yes.
But relationships aren't about connecting to what you see of the will. They're connecting to the will the way the will wants to be expressed itself. Yeah, these are very, very deep ideas he's showing here. Okay, so let's go a bit further. Let's time flies. Okay, we've got more time. No, we've got till about 10 past. What's our time? What's our time limit here? Okay, so let's see. We said officially 40 minutes. So let's see how far we go. Let's see. So therefore, but the point is that then at that point, Nisarva Basaycha, then at that once they did the sin again, now boom, now it's an internal force once again. Kavat Kila like before. And that's what the Medrash says. Hey, Maka Adam, in mine it's rubbed out over here, but it's a posuk in Hosea. The prophet in Hosea in the sixth chapter says, Vehe Maka Adam Avru Bris Sham Bogdubi, right? They, referring the way he's learning it here, like the Jewish people at the golden calf, like Adam, just like man in the Garden of Eden, rebelled against me. They were treacherous, right? That's exactly what's going on. So, meaning the golden calf was in many cases a replay of the Garden of Eden story. Okay. V'zesh amohu yisprach l'Adam rishon. And this now explains an enigmatic element to the story in the Garden of Eden chapter itself. God said, the day you eat from it, you'll surely die. The snake comes to the woman and says, you won't surely die. Who gets it right? Well, they don't die that day. Or do they? On one level, they don't. And that's the level the snake's talking, but he's going to say on another level, they do. Why? What happens? Now, you could say it's also like feels very vindictive of God. If you do this, I'm going to punish you. But here, Reb Chaim Volozhin is teaching something that's actually rooted in a teaching of the Vilna Gaon, his teacher, that actually goes all the way through. And it was not a curse and a punishment. And in general, what we call curses and punishments are not really curses and punishments in the way that humans curse and punish. Humans provide curses and punishment either out of a vindictive sense of you disobeyed me, let me hurt you, chas v'shalom, or out of a sense of I have no other way to push you to do what I want. God doesn't do that. It's not vindictive, not trying to hurt us. But kimi pi alyan lo teitzei atadrad, from the mouth of the good, from the mouth of Hashem, right? We're not going to find bad, right? That's this, by the way, is a pasuk he just quoted. Okay, so in Eicha, what Hashem says, one second, let me actually just, because this is a very, very important point over here. Okay, so what he says over here, the pasuk is in chapter 3, that very long central chapter of Eicha. The pasuk says, right, for the mouth of the above, there won't come out, and different versions say this differently, but so literally, you'd read the pasuk as, is it not from the mouth of Hashem that all bad and good comes? But actually, what he's saying, Reb Chaim Volozhin, is there will never be the mixture of good and bad. You can read it not as a question. So the point he's saying is, and what he's then trying to extrapolate over here, is that Hashem does not punish even for the sake of good. What Hashem does with punishment is not the same as what the human does with punishment. This is a really important principle. If you eat from the tree, if you eat from whatever this tree thing is, you will then inject inside you poison. Blockage, darkness, negativity, which will be ineradicable in the full biological form of the human. No matter how pure we are, there will always be an animal inside us. We will always have what they call the reptilian brain, which is probably more like the bird brain. We will have the mammalian brain. We'll have a lot of animal. That is not eliminable. There was no tikkun achar. There is no alternative way of eliminating it from us. In order to make you a pure vessel of infinite light, im loyale de amisava ikul bakava, unless there is death, disintegration of the body, so that when the body is eventually reconstructed in a new world with a new technologies or whatever it is, can be a vessel for the pure light of God, it can be built differently. But the bodies we have now, after the sin of Adam, the identity of the human is separate from one another. So our identity contains evil. That identity has to be destroyed on some level. Obviously, our self will be there in the future, but identified with the oneness. That's not purely possible in body. The very physical delineation of me, my body is not you, means there's something poisonous that's, you know, and therefore this self-centered thing has to die and has to disintegrate and only eventually can be reconstructed. And that's what I said, the day you eat from it, death becomes a certainty. You're incorporating into you something that will need to die. Not a punishment, it's a simple fact, right? It's a consequence. It's a direct consequence. You're choosing to embrace non-reality. The non-reality has to die. You're choosing to embrace self-centeredness. It will become core, but it won't be the core so that your pure soul can get it there. But the bit you're choosing will have to die. And every single part of you, Adam, is going to become billions of broken pieces. The brokenness that makes them that piece is going to have to die. So the day you eat from it, there's going to be a lot of death. Death will enter the world. You are choosing death. There was a tree of life that's right, and you're choosing the tree of death. That's what he's saying. It's beautiful when you think about this. And that's right. All Gehenna, right? We talk about in the afterlife, the burning of the darkness. It's not punishment. It's that it has to be removed. But since a person chose it and died without doing teshuvah, their self has become identified with it. A part of self is being destroyed. That's got to be awfully painful. When we feel ourselves as in physical danger, we get scared and afraid and go through pain, messaging us, stop. When part of us being emotionally destroyed, chas v'shalom, much more painful. Have a part of the pure spiritual essence of the person's being destroyed. Whew. So these are not vindictive things. This is the consequence of the choices you're making. The choice to choose non-existence, the choice to choose death. Now, if a person chooses 100% not to exist and 100% death, fine, then they're just extinguished. That's nothing worse than that. But yeah. So the point is, but it's not a punishment like God feels a need to hurt us. That's not what's going on. Okay, and this is what Hashem then says at the end of the story in the Garden of Eden. Hena Adomeo, etc. Behold, man has now taken on this new status, knowing good and bad, almost, in a sense, able to build their own realities like God himself, right, into some degree. But and now, lest he stretch out his hands, eats from the tree of life and will live forever. What's wrong with living forever? Why is Hashem so bothered that we might live forever? Doesn't God desire to give to us? Why not let us live forever? So what's wrong if we live forever? But what he's really trying to say is, if he eats from the tree of life and is plugged into eternity, transcends death, he's stuck forever in this self-centered state without the option of death. That would be an absolute catastrophe. Because right now, the only way to rectify is to lose that. It's what we said. For his own good, for the good of man, Gershom Gan Eden, they have to now leave this Eden state, work in a world where now there's not one wholeness of time and one wholeness of the soul, but multiple parts of time and multiple parts of the soul, and each bit will come in, do their bit, go out, and eventually reconnect to the whole oneness. But the oneness realm cannot be infected by this self-centeredness. The self-centeredness now needs another realm. Our world. The world that's mixed of life and death, of good and bad, of poison and light, all this kind of stuff. Each of us operates in this world to bring some kind of tikkun rectification and then can be part of the one again. And that's the idea that we are for our own good removed from Eden for this world of work. And until the body dies, we do whatever we do good. Then the bad bit dies, and then we're able to use the good to connect forever. There's a few places in the Gemara. Here he quotes Gemara and Shabbos, also Gemara and Baba Basra, that there are four who only died because of the poison of the snake. They never did anything wrong in their lives. By the way, amazingly enough, they're not the four biggest heroes, right? It's Binyamin, it's Kilev, the son of David, it's Yishai, the father of David, and Amram, father of Moshe. Notice who it's not. It's not Avram, it's not Sarah, it's not Yitzchak, it's not Rivka, it's not Yaakov, Rachel, Leah, you know, Moshe, Aaron. It's none of these people. Not even David HaMelech. Because actually, to not do a mistake, to not do anything wrong in life, doesn't necessarily mean you've done pure. Like, if you don't take the car out onto the road, it will never get ruined. Now, these are great people who did great things. But the people who did the most great things, you drive around, you know, eventually there's some wear and tear. Things go wrong. So it's an important thing to remember that our purpose in the world is not to avoid making mistakes. That's what we've got to do to maintain the vehicle, right? That's what we've got to make sure. We've got to actually drive somewhere. We've got to actually live our destiny. Okay, it's a side point, but it's an important point. Either way, but since those four people never did anything wrong, in theory, they couldn't live because the very being in a self-centered, serpentile, poisoned, reptilian raptor brain, that very thing is itself intrinsically something in need of death. That's why they die through the snake. Okay? So, they still have to go through death. Fine. And this will go all the way till the end of history. When eventually death will be gone forever, says Yeshayahu in this prophecy. And more than that, when we finally bring all of mankind back, first Yisrael, then all of Adam back to this Garden of Eden status, we will have now taken the energy of everything evil pushes against us and pushed all the way through. And now the very existence of the possibility of evil will be gone. Forever. Ozra Hatuma Avim and Aretz, right, as he says in Zechariah, even the spirit of darkness will be gone forever from the world. Not every individual will make it to the future state, but the whole will be there. And lots of individuals will. Hopefully lots and lots and lots of individuals, right? Okay, so this was the comment on what he was saying. The overall idea that we are plugged into every part of creation. Now back into the main text, and not just the human is, right, not just the soul of the Yisrael, of Adam, is plugged into this whole thing. But also the mitzvahs themselves are also all rooted up there. And that vision of every single mitzvah is plugged into myriads of positions in the spiritual universes that power ours. So we are completely there and the mitzvahs are completely there. Mitzvahs parallel different organs and aspects of human consciousness. Mitzvahs are plugged into the spiritual world. Every time we operate one, we are switching on universes. You put tefillin on and suddenly all over the place, things are lighting up and flowing in positively. And you give stock or give charity, boom, the whole thing lights up in all sorts of ways, et cetera, et cetera. And I quote the Zoya, Kama Shama Zoya, Kal Pekudai Raisa, Misaptam Malka Kadisha. All the mitzvahs in the Torah are unified in the king, in Kadosh Baruch Hu. Minhoi Bereshit the Malka, Minhoi Begufa. Some connect to the head, as it were, of the image of the divine flow of structure of God's flowing things into the world. Minhoi Begdei Malka, Minhoi Begregloi. See, if you look at the spiritual bodies of the universe, of the inner worlds that are flowing things into the world, it looks similar in a spiritual model, like a human body, and different parts will be plugged in. And he's quoting the Zohar, quotes the Zohar and Truma, because there is a kula shayvei vidin brazo di la eila b'chemes chabon kulam. Same basic point. Okay, and then he quotes another kalil and tayag because there is a inan klala. This means that the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah are all kalin kol razin. They got all the secrets, the ilan v'tatayin of the upper and lower worlds. And then he goes on with Chunam Pekudim Kulu Shaifin Ve. Right, again, same thing. Each limb and each thing is connected to all these, and he brings more proof. Let's go to the next paragraph. Chenkas Arizal B'Shai Yichudim. Fine. V'asoyis Ha'odam Ratzoyin Koinis Bar Shemot. So now, when a human does what Hashem wills, U'makayim Be'ezah Eva, and uses a particular limb in our body, and that's why some mitzvahs involve the right hand, So I involve the left hand, the right foot, the left foot, right, etc., etc. And we're kaim eze eva v'kersha boi. Or we use our left ear to hear something, or our eyes. The limb is there doing a mitzvah. Achaz mitzvah Hashem, doing one of the mitzvah Hashem. Hatikun nageh la'oysa olam akoch elyon ha'makbilo. There's a parallel. In the higher universe, it's exactly where it goes. So the higher up the body we're doing the mitzvah with, the higher the impact. That's why learning Torah and teaching Torah that involves the mind and the mouth, that is at the highest points of mitzvahs. Oyla oysevar kedusha, and it blows all sorts of things in. And often mitzvahs involve multiple limbs. It involves multiple parts of the spiritual world. Again, according to the level of passion you put in, the level of love, the level of perfection, the level of care, right? But be rovers because how pure we are when we're doing it. But Torah's kedushas machshavta, how pure our thinking is at the time. But Eisas Yes Mitzvah, and it's the reference of Tovah L'Maaseh Karis that attaches itself to the fundamental essence, which is action. That's a point he's going to emphasize later. Intention alone is not good enough. You got to do the action right. You got to know the halacha in each case. Be erech madregas oisa olam, and according to exactly where that world is. And it flows into the universe and into that point in the human being too. Your right hand did a mitzvah. There's now some kind of spiritual connection to your right hand. He's going to say something remarkable with that soon, which I think we'll have to see next week in Yitz Hashem. Next week, I'm not sure if we are on actually. I'll be in touch over the week. I think I've got something next week. Well, let's be in touch. But okay, whenever we next learn, so that exactly that point that we just said. Okay, fantastic. And we're going to get from here to a wonderful chiddush of what happens when we do a mitzvah. Exactly what happens. You're going to have now a whole footnote going through, and just it's amazing because once you do this, every mitzvah you ever do, ever after, has a whole different feel to it. Okay, any questions? Pleasure, pleasure. Okay, if there's no questions, good. We'll see you. A pleasure, everyone.